You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Gene Johnson.
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's American Horror Story After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's American Horror Story After Show.
All right, all right, all right.
Hi. Hi, and welcome to AfterBuzz for American Horror Story. I am Jackie Borowski, and across from me is...
I'm J.C. Rubio.
And I'm Stephen Lemieux.
I just want to clear up a misconception. We read fan comments. We love to hear feedback. There seemed to be quite a few fans that thought that we didn't like the show. And first, I want to remind you that this show is very bizarre in the way that we have a second season that has absolutely nothing to do with the first season, but has the same characters. So it's almost, I don't think it's ever been done before. Like, you can't, it's hard to come into something when you don't have much of a reference. And we don't hate the show, but I do think it's important to be critical of things that you like. Even if you're enjoying something, that doesn't mean that you have to like everything about it.
Now, with that said, also, it was the first episode. They had to, they had to lay the base, the groundwork.
Right.
And a lot of stuff's coming at you. But
it was bad groundwork. I also think that the show had bad groundwork.
I would not go with that.
Okay.
I disagree.
Okay. I tweeted an article today that there are several people who did think that mm-hmm. it had a bad layout. And this episode is what I wanted to see.
Fantastic.
This is the intro that I wanted to see. I wanted to see the bam in your face. This is scary. We're moving the plot along. We're moving the characters along. We're keeping the story succinct and related to one another. All these points, I could connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is what they should have produced last week.
Definitely. This episode was much more put together. And actually, I really enjoyed this episode. It was enjoyable to see how the cause and effect of what was happening, because there's a lot of things in the beginning that they set up that actually came to a conclusion in the end, and you're just like, wow. And then you have the other things that you're like,
it's so bizarre. Working television, a working script, a script that connects things together.
I don't know. I don't want to get too critical right off the bat right now, but
no, as well.
I have no problem being critical. You guys can hate me all you want for being critical, but I have an MA in critical television theory, which is why even if I love something, I will break it down and see if something makes it better. What makes it good? And I think that's why we're here.
Exactly, because we all have opinions.
Right.
Just like the super fans. You know,
right.
They may not all have MAs, but they have a passion. We all share that passion for the show.
Right.
And that's what we all have
right.
That brings us together. And one thing on the lighter note, did you notice on tonight's episode, along with the first episode, we talked, it had some elements of Carrie last week. And this week, I picked up a little bit of Psycho with the shower scene.
Definitely.
And also a little bit of The Exorcist with the mist.
A little bit of The Exorcist.
Not because of the exorcism per se, but when the priests arrived, they had the mist, just like The Exorcist in the movie. That was the intro for the priest.
Well, and the cross falling at the end.
You know, so it has these little tongue-in-cheek type of things.
I think a lot of this show, though, is an homage. I think Ryan Murphy is a really smart person, and I think that he knows exactly what he's doing, and he's very pop culture savvy. So he will bring that in on any show he does, which also brings me to another introductory point. Oh, Bing is for doing.
That is an
introductory point slash side note. But there were also some people that were concerned that we were mentioning politics too much, but I don't know if our fans know a lot about Ryan Murphy, but Ryan Murphy is a huge Obama supporter. You have to know it to know what he puts out, because he's a gay man who is very political, and he spent a lot of time campaigning for Obama. So it's I don't think that there are subtle references. I think these are hit over your head. This is something Ryan Murphy does.
They're pretty blatant.
Yeah, this is something he does. So it's not, this is not, knowing that going into it, you kind of have to understand that that's where he's coming from. So we open this episode with Bloody Face.
Aha.
Now we know, would you agree, now we know that Kit is not Bloody Face?
It can't be at two places at the same time.
He can't.
In two time periods. Well, here's the thing. Is Bloody Face necessarily bad?
He stabbed the bejesus out of somebody.
Hold on.
That's the singer of Maroon 5. I mean, there's a lot of people who would do that.
He doesn't know that.
Aside from his voice duties and whatnot, but I thought about this when watching. I did catch it last night, and I, you know, watched it again tonight before we went on, but Bloody Face, he's just maybe being protective of the territory. And the people that he killed, he was just protecting Briarcliff. He's just protecting. We don't know that about him yet. Is he a psychotic killer? He's just being protective. We don't know yet. It's too early to tell.
Well, do you think maybe Bloody Face is a copycat killer? Do you know, in the sense that
there was one in the past,
there was one in the past,
future?
And there's one now, and it. I mean, this guy is obviously not an old guy. He's chasing people around. If it was someone from the 60s who was the same exact person doing this crime, it wouldn't add up, because he's chasing these people down. He's too spry for that. But so it's either a copycat killer or it's something supernatural.
You say that it wouldn't add up, but at the same time, you can think about it that they added the aspect of supernatural into this episode.
Right.
So yes. Yes, JC is very happy about this. We had to restrain him like they did Kit in the screening room after they did this. But no, interesting about Bloody Face is, I don't know if it would be a copycat killer per se, just because when you see him in both times, he is exactly the same. There is no difference. And it's not his skin on his face that's messed up. That's a mask completely. You can see the seams. It's like a sewn together.
Right.
Creepy.
Like, so you think it's supernatural?
I think it's supernatural, the fact that he is something eternal that is attached to Briarcliff.
No, I can see that.
Mm, okay.
So this episode centers around the exorcism. Right. That's the main gist of the episode, where you have this dichotomy of psychology, which is the new world. And again, we're in the 60s, so we know it's a time of a lot of changing ideas. And so you have Dr. Oliver, who represents the new world, the psychology, the forward thinking.
Zachary Quinto.
Right. And then you have
Sister Jude,
who represents the old world and the exorcism, or the religious, the more fanaticism, I would say, of a past. First off, I don't even know if this is like up for comment, but do you think that this person was really possessed?
And that's the theme, the overall theme. If you think about what Dr. Arden said in the first episode, that the devil is made up in the front cortex of the mind.
Right.
So are we really seeing what we're seeing, or is this just a construct of our own fears, of the character's fears?
Right.
That's what I'm wondering.
Well, one of the things I was thinking about while watching this episode was, we were talking about whose vision this story is through, like whose eyes are we seeing the story through, and what was an interesting point that I thought of is maybe the eyes we're seeing the story through is somebody reading the diary of Jude or something like that, and in that case, then it wouldn't be something supernatural. It's just her take on the situation. But otherwise, I think if that's not the case, then the exorcism seemed completely real, and they're bringing in the supernatural to the show, and they'll continue it.
I feel the exorcism, and again, like you said, it mimics Exorcist. You know, it was so well done. You have the grainy voice. You have the specific references to the demon knowing these people's problems, what was I going to say? So then you have this showdown between Sister Jude and Dr. Oliver. Do you guys think Dr. Oliver was asked there just to evaluate, what's his name? Tate? No.
Kit.
Kit.
Yes.
Tate's his old name. Sorry. Yes. Just to evaluate him? Or do you think maybe he was asked to see what was going on there?
I think he's a man of principles. I think that he was asked to do Kit, but it's more of the, you can't exactly walk through a hallway covered in crap and not see the crap.
That's,
I mean,
okay.
If that makes any sense.
Right. Because I don't know, like, because you hear the story where, oh my gosh, I'm still learning these characters' names.
I think it's too early for Oliver.
Too early?
Yes. We just got the intro for him this week. So
well, perhaps they'll be planting a seed. He'll go away for a time.
Well, remember what Jed said when he was possessed?
Uh-huh.
He, you know, you're the reason why your mother gave you up for adoption.
Right.
If you caught that. And remember, the asylum is a haven for all the people that were unloved.
Right.
So then Oliver's unloved, so maybe there is a reason why he belongs at the asylum.
Right. I think everybody who's there belongs there. I mean, I would say that arguably everybody who's there belongs there. I just think that maybe he has more of a... I'm sorry. I think he has more of a storyline like Lena's, where she... pretended she was going in to do a story about the bakery, but then wanted to really secretly do an expose. I think maybe that might be more of his motive as well.
Okay.
Hmm.
And you brought up Len, and we forgot to mention about the offing of Wendy.
Right.
I don't know if she's dead or what, but I was thinking if Bloody Face killed Wendy, you know, which he did. It looked
I'm pretty sure he did.
Okay, so when and how is Lana going to find out about Wendy's death? Would it be just crazy if she encounters Bloody Face and he's wearing Wendy's face? Because they say that Bloody Face is
right.
Wears his victim's face.
That would make sense. I mean, that would make total sense. And I also think she is actually dead because you can't... I mean, she's one of the main characters in the asylum, and basically she was going to break her out and then gets killed. And so this effectually kills that storyline where she doesn't have a savior anymore. It's up to her. It's up to her to figure that out. So, and we know, and by this, we know that Kit cannot be Bloody Face because he can't be two places at once.
Well, there is the other thing at the end with Dr. Arden, with seeing the pictures. Do you think that it's possible that Arden is Bloody Face?
We'll get to that because I don't want to start with the end.
Well,
are we going to tease it up for a little bit later? Okay, because that's
yes.
Our juiciest piece.
Yeah, that is our juiciest piece.
Okay well, I want to throw something in there then, because where the episode begins kind of opens up for a lot of the episode, too, with the side plot of Lana and Kit and, what's her name, Grace.
Right.
And that is with Jude talking to Arden at the very beginning, talking about, how about we try electroshock therapy with her?
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a big point right in the beginning where that was her straw that breaks the camel's back, where she needs to be like, I need to get out of here.
Right.
Because she was writing down notes and she'd find out about that.
Right. Do you, have you guys ever seen, this is so random, Return to Oz?
No.
No.
That's a movie that opens with electroshock therapy. And I just, every time I think about it, like, it's such a horrifying, like, psychological thing that they used to do. And it's like, so ineffectual and antiquated that it becomes a great symbol, because anytime anybody thinks of electroshock therapy, they're like, oh my God, that's so old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's the perfect,
it's terrifying.
It's the perfect way to show how terrifying an insane asylum is. That is like one of the tantamount terrifying.
Got a question that both of us brought up while watching the episode, while Steven and I were watching it.
Mm-hmm.
When Lana was being, you know, being shocked, how mm-hmm. could the other doctors hold her down without them getting shocked themselves?
Yeah, I don't know about that, because usually you're strapped down.
Yeah.
Right. We were wondering that.
It just seemed everything about the acting was believable, everything except for the fact that they were touching her skin while she was being shocked.
Maybe there is a way, we just don't know. So, like,
yeah.
People tweet us or send us a comment of how it's done. That'd be great. But since we're talking about the electroshock treatment, did you notice when Sister Jude was holding Lana down, it seemed like she felt bad for what she was doing. And that made me think, because remember how this shows there's going to be so many twists and turns. I'm wondering if deep down inside, this is all formulated because Sister Jude wants to get Dr. Arden. Mm-hmm. They're the complete polar
opposites. Right. They're the
antagonist, protagonist.
Antagonists. I mean, it's weird because I wouldn't call one person one over the other. So they're basically the two main antagonists together against each other.
They're the competing forces.
Right.
And what I was thinking is that it seems like Lana wants to blow everything up, you know, by writing the article, by infiltrating and find out what's going on in Briarcliff and sending it out to the masses. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe Sister Jude might be on the same page. This is really deep, though. But it's not time enough. She needs more information. Because when I saw her shock, you know, helping shock Lana, you could see that she felt bad for what she was doing.
Well, I think that brings us into our next point, which is our discovery of Sister Jude's past. Okay. We basically find out she was a lounge singer, mm-hmm. and she was really drunk one night and killed a girl. And I think it's inferred, as far as this storyline, that this is why she becomes a nun.
Yeah.
And we also learn from the last episode, she doesn't drink alcohol, so this is also why she doesn't drink alcohol. So she is suppressing a lot of her own, like, very violent and upsetting history. And so I think that, yes, I think that she does feel, I think that there was sympathy there. And I think that she also has sympathy to Sister Mary, because remember, she, in the last episode, she's calling Sister Mary, I forget what she calls her. She says something basically like that you're stupid. And then
says, don't ever call yourself stupid.
And then changes and says, don't ever call yourself stupid. I think she's battling her own, like, self-worth issues.
Well, a very interesting thing about Sister Jude that's a competing emotional thing for her is when she was during the exorcist scene where she's mm-hmm. in the room, everything that, what's his name? Do we have?
Jed,
yeah. Everything that Jed was saying, nothing was a lie. Like, it was literally the writers telling you, here, 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 here.
That's
here.
Why I think it had to be, like, in
real.
The question of if
real.
He's possessed or not, he has to be possessed because he knows too much about the characters.
But what I'm saying is, like, what he says, like, I wrote down some of the quotes. He says, you're a whore, 53 guys, and the girl in the blue dress, like, It's great to see the chemistry between Jude and Shelley, who's the nymphomaniac, because in the previous episode, you see every time they're in the same room, it's like, think of Jude dealing with her own past. Like, no, you're just, no. Like, hates her. Absolutely hates her. It's like she's looking at her previous self.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like, they're doing a lot with whores and harlots and everything in these two episodes, especially including Arden. We'll get to that later, but it's...
I was reading an interview with Ryan Murphy. Again, it's on my Twitter if you want to follow a link to it. I think it was with The Hollywood Reporter. He says, Jessica Lange this year on American Horror Story is very much my childhood obsession with Catholicism and trying to be without sin and failing in my journey through that. So I think this is, again, this is because he makes his shows so personal. I think this has a lot to do with his own personal struggle of, as a gay man, and if he grew up Catholic, there's a lot of personal struggle with your own sexuality with that. And I think that might be him exploring that in this show.
And you hear it in lines. Basically, when Zachary Quinto's character, when Dr. Thredson, was shocked by the barbaric usage of electric shock therapy to cure homosexuality.
Right.
Now, I thought it was neat that he had that line.
What was his line there? I didn't quite catch it.
Behavior modification is the current standard.
Behavior modification. Okay, that's what I was thinking.
I wrote it down, though, too, because I think, and again, I'll say this, I've said this before, is that because Ryan Murphy is so invested, and last season wasn't as political. And because Ryan Murphy is so invested in politics, I think he's really, really heavy, hard hitting these issues and bringing them to the forefront.
Will it turn off fans?
I think it could, because that's what happened to Glee. A lot of fans got turned off because he made the issue the story, and then instead of having a story contain an issue, and that and when Glee started. There was a great story, and they all had issues, but the story took forefront versus it flip-flopped in later seasons and the issue takes forefront. And I think that's the one thing that he dances along, is that he has a problem of walking a fine line.
Do you think the casual viewer will pick that up, though?
See, here's the thing. I don't think American Horror Story has casual viewers. You can tweet me and let me know if I'm wrong, but this is not the kind of, it's a genre show. It's a genre show made by a well-known activist producer.
I disagree. I think last season was that way, but this season is, I said something along those lines before, and after seeing the viewer response to this season, seeing how many people I know that had no idea what it was and now are watching it, with their viral marketing, everything, we will have a lot more casual viewers. So I think it's not, it is in your face, but I don't think as many people are going to notice it just because it is the 60s and they're using it smart. And I think that's one of the good things about having this only be a one season storyline is that they don't have time like Glee to go into, oh, what are we going to talk about this time? Oh, let's come up with this. This is going to be, they have to use more straight to the point.
Remember in the late 80s, early 90s when they had a very special episode of blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't, that's how what Glee became. And I don't want this to become a very special episode of American Horror Story.
Let's go ahead and get back to the show, though. Yeah, so we're talking about Sister Jude's past, right? And what did you guys think of the whole hit and run? Were you expecting there to be something so, like, traumatic in her past as her being drunk to lead her to the nunnery?
Yes. I did not see that coming.
I knew something was there, but I just didn't know what. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, now it makes sense. You know, now it makes sense why. Because remember, also, Jed was saying, how hard is it being the smartest person in the room and no one pays attention to you?
Because of that clam between your legs. That was,
That was the rest of the line. Jack is like giving this crazy face.
No, I just, this episode was arguably very, like, woman-centered. And I feel that this is what I mean by heavy hitting. It's, like, people like me watching this, I'm, like, hearing line after line after line of, like, derogatory references to women. It's hard for me not to notice that you're making a political statement. Mm-hmm. I think even not knowing anything about the show, I would think that. But this is a weird topic in that scene. She looks almost the same age. When do you think this age is? Like,
I noticed that.
Yeah. Do you think this happened a long time ago? Do you think that's a budget choice? That was like a budget problem, or do you think this is a specific choice? Like, this happened 2 years ago, now she's here.
Because last season when they did her like flashbacks, didn't they like CGI her a little bit or like doll her up a little?
Just a bit.
Yeah, they changed her up a little bit.
Well, how do you guys think that time is? Do you think this happened a long time ago? Do you think this happened recently?
I think it's a matter of a year or two.
Okay.
I mean, maybe her medication is her getting the position as the head of this thing. Like, that's medicating herself. Is that what she believes?
But for her to have moved up that quickly?
See, that is the thing that was bizarre to me, because I'm like, it seems like she's been working her whole life at this.
Right.
But the flashbacks, I'm like, first off, like, lounge singer, you would think that a younger, like, stereotypically a younger person would be whoring themselves out when they're, like, I don't know. I just find it bizarre that like an older woman would be like.
Well, they're army guys, so I mean, where else would an older woman go for it? Because she can pick up. No, that came out totally wrong.
Dear army viewers, would you do an old woman?
Okay.
Please don't listen to that.
But it's kind of the same concept of cougars. I mean, cougars go after the young men who are lusting, and who is lusting more than a soldier who just got back on retrieve? But like,
so do you think this is Vietnam War era, World War II?
Well, like, it's 1964.
No, I mean in the flashback.
Oh, in the flashback.
Because we have military guys.
I'd say it's probably still like 1960. Like, it's really not so much a huge, not like World War II, but still something's going on.
So Vietnam.
Yeah.
No. Vietnam.
Vietnam was 70s.
But then she does have her,
Vietnam start in the 60s?
We'll figure it out. Tweet
but
us.
She's a promiscuous woman, but she's still got her boundaries.
In the 60s,
like,
though.
The guy said, we can't take you home. The baby's at home. Like, that kind of threw her off. I think that was a big, do you think they happened in the same night?
Wait, repeat that last part again?
Well, remember she was drinking at the cabaret club, she has a cigarette, and then she says, take me home, darling. He says, no, the baby's at home, I can't. And then the next scene you see is her drinking with a cigarette in a cup in her car.
Yes.
Driving, so that's the same night.
I absolutely think that's the same night, because why else would you do something so upset, like reckless?
Yeah, that's
because
the night that changed your life.
Yeah.
And once again, it shows that she was not loved.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that, Yeah, every character.
But with that said, I had written something about that, you know, because I think deep down inside she's quite the shrewd woman.
And, of course.
And but early on, she used her body to get what she wanted because she wasn't accepted for her mind.
Right.
So that led her to get that validation through, you know, through sleeping with other men with, as what Jed said, the 53 hoo-has that she's had inside of her. But ooh, now Jed said something on the way out when she was getting pulled out of the room with the Monsignor. He told the Monsignor, protect your whore.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, you know, couple that with that the first episode where she had that flat, you know, that fantasy scene.
So
with
are you saying that you think they're actually having sex?
I don't know. I want to know. Maybe
that was his reference to knowing her fantasy.
Yeah.
See, that's what I got from it. But I mean, I don't know.
Well, he knew she was wearing red drawers. Yeah.
Yeah, because he had that reference to her fantasy.
Can we get into Arden at
yes,
all?
I've been
we're begging doing it. To go into
we're
Arden
doing it.
Because there is
a lot.
There is one scene in this entire episode that I saw and I was just like, oh my God, the symbolism is amazing here. Even JC was like, yes. It's the scene where Mary Nunes had just finished feeding whatever they're feeding, and Arden comes out and he's like, I got a gift for you.
The apple scene.
And I was just like, okay, it's a candy apple. Is it poison? No, it's not poison. It is the root of all sin, apple. You are on my side. This is your reward, and you're going to indulge in this sin.
It's Adam handing Eve the apple. It's the wicked queen handing Snow White the apple. Like
the acting, though, it was like the way they created an intensity between just the candy apple was just amazing. I really, really enjoyed that
scene.
And
I think her hesitation was palpable.
Yeah.
Like he's basically shoving it in her face, and she's like, ah, no. And like
he basically eat it.
Right. Like, she was having a clear, like a clear issue with whether or not an emotional struggle with whether or not she was going to eat it.
She's feeding monsters, potentially dead bodies. And she has a struggle with eating the apple.
Right.
I just love it.
She's great at taking orders, you know.
But that's the interesting thing, though. It's like it speaks to the psychology of people because you can do, you know.
You can justify one thing.
You can justify one thing but not another. And mm-hmm. people do it all the time.
Yeah. And then the scene with Arden and Shelley.
Yeah.
Not my favorite scene.
Not
wait,
your favorite
Shelley,
scene.
Wait, Shelley Chloe Sevigny?
Yes.
Yes.
The nympho, when she is, for just a bit, just 5 minutes of sunlight, but it's amazing how it was written because you can tell she's talking down about herself.
Mm-hmm.
She's talking down about her life and telling a pity story, yet at the same time, her whole body language is to seduce the doctor.
See, and I had trouble with that scene because, honestly, I thought the beginning of it was great because it actually revealed something when she said that all men, I don't remember the exact line, but, you know, about sex and every man wants.
Every man needs. Yeah.
And he gave her a look like to tell me that some of his past, and we found out with the pictures and whatnot, mm-hmm. that he has some sexual deviant behaviors that he's trying to hide, you know, that's starting to come up.
Well, do you think Shelley represents everyone's sexuality? Because I think she is the representation of everybody's like closeted sexual issues, and everyone in that place basically shuns her. They're like, oh, this person. But she's the only person that's expressing herself.
She's their shame.
Right. She's their shame personified.
But what I didn't get is why did she just... She basically told him everything she was. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of exposition in there. And I was just like, within
yeah,
two...
Yeah, it got really exposition-y.
I was like,
because, well, how else will you do it in a flashback? That was the only other way they could have done it.
But that leads me to believe one of two things. And I don't think it was lazy writing. I think it might just be... Coin it maybe from the Joker or Batman. Maybe she's just lying about her story. You know, because why would she just blurt it all out in like minute 30 to give Chloe something to do in the scene?
Well, there's a great...
Well, and we know it's not a money or a script thing, or because they've done flashbacks already in this episode. So I agree. I think it might be you're not supposed to know what is true or not coming out of her mouth.
Right. So,
but there was a very powerful line that she said in that, and that was, it's not for self, it's for country. When her husband walks in on her having a three-way, they have another, I mean, this is another reference to Navy personnel, like mm-hmm. the military being active. So you still got to think about what's going on right there. And then it's not for self, it's for country. And then the next thing she says is, and they didn't do anything to stop him as he threw her in the asylum. So it's okay. Kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm doing this for the country, but the country won't do this, won't help me in this respect.
Right.
So it was kind of an interesting line.
That is interesting.
We're really breaking this sucker down.
So Dr. Arden, I think we should move on then to the next scene where you're like, okay, he's poo-pooing her sexuality. And in the next scene, he basically gets a prostitute.
Who looks like either Mary Eunice or Sister Jude.
I would say Mary Eunice.
Yeah.
Okay.
We know that his obsession is with Mary Eunice. He makes her put on a nun costume. He wants to paint up a whore, basically. So he's playing all this fancy music, wants her to drink, like,
the most expensive Cabernet you'll ever drink in your life.
Right. And then she finds out that he is chopping up bodies.
Yes.
Well, you don't know that he's chopping up bodies.
That's true.
Because there is, like, I mean, of course, he has pictures of lots of bondage and things like that.
Right.
But then you see the pictures of the chopped up bodies. Is he using the bodies that Bloody Face chopped up and taking pictures of them?
Right. See, this is also, and then you hear, now if we can hearken back to, oh my gosh, I keep wanting to use
while you're,
the wrong
while you're
name.
Looking out.
Kit's story.
Okay.
Back to Kit's story. The bodies, some of those bodies were, like, decapitated and looked like they were drained of blood, just like the Kit's alien story.
Well, yeah.
And so it's like, where does Bloody Face tie into the drained blood? And this is what is so captivating. It's like you have now enough pieces of the puzzle to want to try and add up the puzzle.
Well,
I didn't feel that way last week.
I don't know if you caught this because I barely registered it, but when Kit was talking to Dr. Oliver,
mm-hmm.
he said that they're still alive. Like his wife?
Yes.
He said,
He believes his wife is still alive.
He said, I saw her decapitated body, but then I've seen her after that.
Right. So he thinks that they used someone else or something like that.
Still too early, I think.
This makes me wonder, though, some of these harken to, like, very specific, like, New Orleans ghost and vampire stories. I wonder if that's part of, like, the research that they have done, like, American folklore.
Well, you've actually hit on something. It was in that, I don't know if it was that area, but they're relating on the boards. They're talking about the lemon heads. And that's what they were talking about. It's this group of, like, cannibals that would eat the people outside of the insane asylum. And, if you guys know the story, just send us the info on it. But you're close to something, actually, Jackie. It's very similar to these, like, serious cannibals that had,
they were Americans.
Yes. No. This is very similar to, like, to the whole thing.
Because I feel like this is American folklore. Like, mm-hmm. I think they are referencing, it's an American horror story. They're referencing specific folklore that people here would know.
Now, I wanted to actually talk about, well, you know, since we're talking about Arden and when he was there with his prostitute, he said actually a few things that I think this episode, when we see it, when the season's done,
mm-hmm.
we're going to look back and this episode's going to have so many clues.
Yes.
And we're like, oh.
Yes.
And first thing, I find the anticipation more erotic than the act itself. So when you were talking about, you know, him chopping people up, I don't know if he's necessarily chopping the people up. I think he enjoys the torture of it. He sends other people to do it for him. He enjoys the process.
So maybe he's the
puppet master.
Maybe our rumors of him being the one who's containing Bloody Face are true then.
Yeah.
A fan said that they thought that maybe he was, the Bloody Face was the person in the room with the scratched walls, or that some other people think that he is Bloody Face.
And finally, remember he quoted Chopin when he had her listen? Okay, but that tells me also that something happened when he was a kid and he lost his one true love. Because he was in that moment when he was explaining about lost love.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking that's the genesis of his path where it led him
I'm not sure it was a two-sided love, though. Maybe even when he was a kid, he had an obsession, because he doesn't seem like a person who would have a, like, healthy, functioning relationship at any point in his life.
And I want to watch out for one thing. Like, I'll be able to know a little bit more after we find out who Bloody Face's next victim is, but Bloody Face is around the asylum. Nobody knew, like, how would Bloody Face know about Wendy? Like, the fact that he chose Wendy as his victim after Wendy's trying to get her back out, get Lana back out using a lawyer, like, trying to call people and everything and retract her statement. So that kind of shows us that Bloody Face is definitely
has
involved
to know the people, yeah,
in that storyline.
Oh, yeah.
So even Jude is not exempt from perhaps being Bloody Face.
That is true.
Just throwing that out there.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
Well, that's the only person that knew.
Yeah.
Really. What happened with Wendy and Lana and it was Sister Jude.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So
speaking of random coinkydinks.
Can we actually just mention, first off, as the only woman on this panel, I would...
Who's running the back? Is it Phil or Marissa?
No, it's Marissa.
No, it's Phil.
Hey, Phil.
So there, I can say, I am as the only woman on this panel and having so much like offensive crap shoved in your face throughout the whole episode, and I love the episode for being, I love it for being controversial. I'm not saying I dislike it, but that moment of sweet retribution when she knees him in the crotch and then runs off, I was like, thank you, God.
Unnecessary roughness.
Welcome to Jackie's Soapbox.
I needed something like that at the end of the episode. I was just like, okay, finally.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really want to see her get killed by him because then it would have just opened up too much bullcrap with that. But no, actually, what I was saying, speaking of getting kneed in the nuts, no, I'm just totally kidding.
Let's talk about the escape.
No, let's talk about iTunes and how you can definitely find us there and subscribe and comment and talk about how amazing our American Horror Story Asylum show is. Wouldn't you say? Because we definitely like seeing those comments.
Yes, we do read the comments and we take them into consideration.
Makes it super interactive. What ideas, any segments you guys want to see, just let us know.
After iTunes, moving on to the escape, which is the big shebang here.
It is.
The filming of this was amazing. I loved the red light filter. I love the doors opening. Have you guys ever been to Alcatraz?
Yes.
That is what it reminded me of, the clank, 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 clank of the doors all opening.
Well, we skirt the whole... foreshadowing of the escape earlier in the episode when it shows Lana listening in on them talking about the tunnels.
Right.
And of course, Lana already knows about the tunnels because she was with Sister Mary Eunice going through them, and that's when they found her and captured her and everything.
Right.
But then,
escape is a major theme here, I think, with all the characters. I think because nobody wants to be there.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, but they really take it to the whole other level, like trying to figure it out. And then she tries to make the deal with Grace.
Right.
And why do you think she hates Kit so much? Of course, there's a suspicion that he was that he's Bloody Face.
I was going to ask you that question.
I think she fervently. I've read a lot of different articles and a lot of different takes on it. I think that she fervently believes that. I think she has just sold it to herself that she walked in the last episode firmly believing that he was Bloody Face. So we have no. We have no other reason to think that she doesn't just firmly believe that. And if you really, really thought someone was a volatile killer, would you be like, oh, yeah, I'll have them escape with me?
She was just doing the right thing. And what she believes is the right thing. And remember, she only sees just a narrow view. We get to see everything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's why we know that.
That's why we're Tate's our
we're going to put you in the penalty box every time you say Tate.
Kit is our hero. He's our hero.
Right.
So, I mean, we don't necessarily as audience members share that same view, but for her, he's a killer.
It just seems kind of annoying to me that I guess that is, again, is some characters have their character flaws, and that's her character flaws, that she judges people by what they see. But everything he's done around her has been to help her move along. And she still just will not let up at all. He covered her notes. Him and Grace were going to help her get out. Speaking of Grace, there was that great scene of the showing some skin in the steam room. That was a thumbs up to that.
Fantastic scene there. No, I want to bring up Grace really quick.
She's so captivating. I just want to know more. She's so captivating.
She's an angel.
Aww.
But would an angel be so mean to...
And so sexy.
Think of it this way. Okay, she is trying to... Last week, and this week too, she's trying to get Kip out. Right now, when she brought up to Lana that we have to help Kip get out as well, and...
Kit, sorry.
And
not that I didn't think he was Tate 5 minutes ago,
But Lana was just like, no, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And she says, you don't trust anyone. And I understand what that's like. And then Lana kind of just dropped down her walls, and she related to Grace just a little bit more. Because in a way, I think she's trying to put them both together for Kit and Lana to escape, to become allies. The only way they're going to get out is by helping each other out. So I think she, honestly, I think in the end she is just like some sort of angel. Remember, because now we had the exorcism.
Yeah.
Well, because we can project anything we want on her because we don't know a lot about her. And that's what makes her such a captivating character, is that there's not, everybody else has already had some element of their backstory revealed. And she's the only one that we don't know anything about, really.
Well, her and Pepper.
Yes.
Except for
we know Pepper chopped off. Yeah. See, we still even know part of Pepper's backstory.
Right.
It's too early.
So after so it ends with
the exorcism caused
the doors to open. Sister Mary, this is have you guys seen the movie Fallen?
No.
It had Denzel Washington.
Yes, it's been years since
and,
I've seen that.
And basically, once like one person dies, the Satan character moves to the next person.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So this is that's exactly what I thought of too. As we're talking about movie references
time
here.
Is on my side.
Yeah, I really wanted her to sing that as the spirit came out and hit her in the face. So now we know that she's possessed, and so she kind of I think she was trying to turn Dr. Arden on in that. Oh, last scene.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
She was awake the whole time.
Yeah.
So that's going to be neat to see now, because we've seen Sister Mary Eunice in a certain way these first two episodes. Now she's going to be the opposite, it seems like. You know, she knows a lot about Dr. Arden.
And right.
She's going to use all his little weaknesses against him.
Now, this is a fascinating story twist.
Yeah,
I love it.
Because Arden has something on everyone.
Right.
No one has anything on him.
Right.
Until now.
So the scene ends with Kit being whipped, and then we have, is there anything else you guys want to say?
Well, Kit was not only whipped, he was, well, Grace is like the angel, like taking, well, I guess Grace wasn't the one who did it, Kit was it for Grace.
Right.
Kit took the whips for Grace, so instead of 20 lashes each, he got 40 lashes, and they made her, I love when they're like, oh, but you made the right choice and turned them in. Here's your reward. Open that door. Open that door. You don't know what the hell you're going to see. And then she opens the door and they come in and choose which weapon you want me to give him the lashes with. Oh, it's just
Well, it's just like this really is a prison place. It's like, you know, your prize is depressing.
Yeah.
Will Lana now believe more in Kit, or does he just think he's that much more manipulative?
I think he did that for the sole reason of trying to win her over, of course. Mm-hmm. 'Cause she was in the room, he was like, "Wait." And he's like, "This is the only way I'm going to ever like get her is to prevent violence to a woman, so you know that I'm not trying to be violent towards the women."
Right.
So, Jackie, what do you think? Do you think she's buying it or not? Do you think this is...
Who?
Is Lana buying Kit's move right there?
I think Lana has a big heart, and I think that shows something to her. I think that's that kind of sacrifice speaks to her.
Okay. I wonder what she's going to do when she finds out that Wendy's dead.
We shall see.
Maybe prediction.
Unless, like you said, Wendy's... Bloody Face is wearing Wendy's face, although Bloody Face is not very good at wearing people's faces, so
yeah.
I think she would notice if Wendy had a bloody kind of mashed up version of her own face. I would hope that she would notice that. So moving on.
So you got any news and gossip for us?
News and gossip.
AfterBuzz TV News.
The report released Wednesday by American Association of University Women graduating to a pay gap, is the report, shows women are less likely than men to be fully employed 1 year out of college, and when they do have a steady job, women are earning less. In their first year out of college, millennial women are paid 82 cents for every dollar paid to their male peers. With many of those college graduates saddled with student loans, the pay gap is making student debt more burdensome for women. I also had a note here about, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but there's basically a hurricane headed for the East Coast that they're calling Frankenstorm. I just thought that was interesting in light of the show, because we have a nor'easter in the next episode. So
that's right.
Predictions for that. I have to say, though, I'm really confused as to why they did a blackout and then a nor'easter. It just seems like the same storyline.
Now, explain to me what a nor'easter is.
Like a windstorm? Isn't it a windstorm? I don't know.
Go ahead.
If you know what a nor'easter is, I just know it's a storm.
Watchtower Base, people in the chat roll, let us know. I can check out my Twitter right now. If you tell us what a nor'easter is within the next 2 minutes, you're on the clock now.
In the meanwhile, let me go ahead and tell you about our wonderful shows here at AfterBuzz TV. We're running a great fall lineup of over 50 shows a week.
Like what?
I don't know. We have American Horror Story Asylum, as well as great shows like Dexter, Here Comes Honey Boo Boo.
What about RuPaul's Drag Race?
That's a good one. I engineered for that yesterday.
And don't forget the X Factor on Wednesdays.
X Factor.
Nice.
Okay, we're back.
Okay, guys. So where can they find you guys?
We have the official definition.
Oh, Nor'easter.
Thank you, Phil.
Nor'easter. According to online, is a type of macro scale.
According to Bing.com.
That's right.
Yes.
Is a macro scale storm along the east coast of the United States and Atlantic Canada. So named because the storm travels to the northeast from the south and the winds come from the northeast, especially in the coastal areas of New England and Atlantic Canada. By the way, I suck at reading because I'm reading half sideways.
You sound so sarcastic.
This type of storm has characteristics similar to a hurricane. More specifically, it describes a low-pressure area whose center of rotation is just off the east coast and whose landing winds is left forward quadrant rotate onto land from the northeast.
And Phil will
Does
be
anyone
right
understand
back.
That?
And Phil will be right back with our 5-day right after the break. Okay.
So that is blackout number two, I guess.
That is.
Do we have any predictions?
I have.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
All right, Steven. So what do you see next week, man?
I can't. I just don't
you go
even.
Ahead.
This is the hardest show to have predictions on, really. I'm sorry.
Because I know I'm going to be wrong. It's I just don't want to say anything because I'm like, I know whatever I say is not going to be right. It's just not. It's just not.
All right.
Except for aliens from the future. I'm sticking with that.
Okay. We you know what? Actually.
People from the future, not actual aliens.
Instead of looking at predictions that way, how about looking at the way some unanswered questions, like that thing that came out of Kit's neck. Where is that? Are we going to see that back? Is that going to be explained? What are the stuff, the things we want to see for next week? Those may be the questions, maybe questions slash predictions. Maybe something like that. Like, that's mine. I want to know where that little alien cockroach went to. Any questions? Future questions? Anyone?
I want to know. I want to know what Sister Mary is going to act like now that she's possessed.
Oh hell yeah!
I'm very excited for
that's
that.
Gonna be cool.
I'm excited, but for a different reason than you, Jackie. So, hey, I'm a guy.
I want to know what they're feeding out in that area.
Yes.
I want to
Frankenstein monster business. And I want to know what that is, and I want to know what the aliens are, and I know I'm not going to find out next week.
Prediction wise, I'm going to say that. Dr. Oliver catches Arden in a sticky situation during the blackout.
Yeah.
So I would say a character.
Someone will, but I think it's going to be Dr. Oliver because he's going to be doing, oh, there's a blackout. I can go around this whole area and inspect it without much trouble.
You think next week?
Maybe not next week, but I think it's definitely going to happen.
No, because then it would nullify, since Sister Mary Eunice knows everything about the doctor. She has the secrets, remember?
I think we're going to see more of Jenna Dewan Tatum running.
Yeah.
Lots of running.
And somehow a little, even though Adam
So
Levine,
where can they find you guys?
You can find me at The Everyday Man.
You can find me at Stephen Lemieux.
I'm at 123 Jackie B. And side note, if you want to know what that song is that keeps playing in the asylum
Let me
lobby,
know right now.
I know. So follow me on Twitter and I'll tell you.
Oh, a tease, everybody.
Bam!
Hey, Phil, what can they find you, buddy?
They can find me here at AfterBuzz TV and on Revenge After Show.
Oh, yes.
And making fun of JC every now and then.
He does that quite often. Go.
Every now and then, yeah.
And you can find all of us at AfterBuzz TV. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.